Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Monday. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto Home Life Business. Great job by them to always make sure you're fully protected, at the same time save you money. Customer service means everything at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Rich Scarcella, 135 today. Donnie Collins at 206. Bucknell basketball coach John Griffin at 235. Neil Kulong tomorrow. Then we'll work on Frank Bodani and Mark Wogenrich for later in the week. And so there's a lot to talk about. You think? Of course there is. So let's see. So I guess we'll do this in chronological order. It's usually easiest for me to do it that way. To take it in chronological order. So that means you start with the game. It's amazing, and I talked about this in the Ohio State game, and there are a lot of similarities between the two as to how they played out. But it's amazing how a sequence becomes the sequence. When we have two teams going at it, it's who can win the sequence. And Penn State is down 14-3. Okay. They start a drive at their own 25, convert a couple of fourth downs, find the end zone, 14-9. We'll talk about the two-point stuff in a moment, okay? I'm obviously not going to bypass that. Okay. So please don't think I'm bypassing the 2 points. I'm just doing this in sequence here first. So it's 14-9. So Penn State, we always talk, and this goes back to the Bill Belichick theory about winning the middle eight. It's one of the reasons why you defer on the toss. So Penn State, right before the half, 29 seconds to go, scores a touchdown and gets the ball to start the second half. Okay. And they get the ball to start the second half. And Penn State, in the opening nine games of the season, had scored six times on the first drive of the second half, five touchdowns and a field goal. Okay. And they start at the 25 after a touchback. They get a first down. Now they're out to the 36-37. Then Drew Aller takes off and gets another first down out to the 48, but fumbles. So here you are starting the second half after scoring. And the start of the half now looks like all the other games you've been playing. Scoring before the end of the half, starting the second half with points, and the fumble occurs. You got two first downs on the drive. You're moving. And the fumble happens. To the credit of the Penn State defense, they only give up three. But again, it took a long time. It's funny, I was talking to Harry Smith today from NBC about that. And we were sitting up in the broadcast booth today talking about it. They're doing a feature next week on We Are. And he said, Steve, it seemed like they got the ball after that fumble, and it took them forever to get it in there. He says, yeah, they 8 yards, they 8 clock, they got three. I said, but it's how they did it. So now it's great. Now it's, 17-9. Okay. And I know a lot, justifiably, is going to be made of the fact that Michigan ran the ball 32 straight times to close the game. Again, absolutely correct. But what makes it different is this. It's very difficult to stack in against a team like that that's running the ball like that. And I'm not talking about execution here. But what's your big worry with that guy at quarterback? Two things. Number one, he can get out to the edge and make a play like he did a couple of times in the game, or he can play action faking and throw it. So you can't say, hey, okay, everybody's going to bunch in. Let's take all 11 guys and bunch them in. You can't quite do that because of the capability of the guy at quarterback. He's such a good thrower on play action, 84%, that you have to be wary of the possibility the entire time, even as they're running one running play after another. And that's where you got to give Michigan a lot of credit for what they did with that. So now let's get to the 2-point, okay? And again, I'll do this the same way I did with the Ohio State game. You always have to talk about what are the pluses, what are the minuses. Okay, so let's start with, okay, the minuses. The minus happens to be, let's take the first one. It's 14-9. So the minus is what happened. You missed the 2-point conversion. So now you're down 5. Okay. Could be down 4, okay, but you're down 5. Feels different, too. Then, okay, if you kick, it's 14-10. Standard number, okay. First half. Again, if you kick, I got it. 14-10, standard number. Feel like you're there. You're going to get the ball to start the second half. If you're in a game where you're struggling, where you feel like, you know, like I need to somehow figure out how to find points, well, the idea is, hey, let's go for 2 here. Let's see if we can make it a 3-point game, and then we can get a drive going, and we can tie the game with a field goal. That's, you know, in all likelihood, that's the thought process behind that. But for anybody who argues you should have kicked the extra point, you're justified in your argument. That's standard football. Now, the card says you should go for 2 all the time. I'm talking about analytics, not the card. Right? You should go for 2 all the time. There's a card, though, that talks about when you should, and I got that. And the idea, I'm sure, is for them would be, okay, go for 2 here, and you also have to like the 2-point play you're calling, and make it a 3-point game, and now a field goal can tie the game. Okay. So those are the pros and cons. I mean, there's not really a con to me of kicking the extra point, except you still need a touchdown to get in front anyway. You can't tie the game with a 4-point play. There isn't a 4-point play. So that's the negative to it, but it's a standard play, especially at the end of the half. And anybody who argues that, I got it. So now the 2-point play after the touchdown to make it 24-15. Again, kick the extra point, and the pro is you're down one possession. You're not down one score. This is a distinction I've tried to make in my classroom with my students when it comes to play-by-play. You're not down. When you hear it's a one-score game and it's 8, that is absolutely incorrect. I said, you always phrase it that you're down a possession. Now, you can get, that means you have to get into the end zone twice. One's a six, one's a two. But you can do it on the same possession. You're not down one score. You have to score, get in the end zone twice. The key is you call it one possession because you can do it on a possession. So they get there. And to me, this is the follow-up question. The follow-up question is not the follow-up question that was asked the other day. Was it your, okay? By going for two now, okay, by kicking the extra point, you guarantee it's a one-possession game. Anybody who argues that is completely within their realm to argue that and not be incorrect. How about that? Okay. The other thought process on this is you go for two now with the idea, with a couple of points, with the idea that I'm going to make it a 24-17 game, and guess what? That gives me now the option by scoring another touchdown to go for two to win the game if I want. In other words, I don't want this game to go to overtime. Let's just try and win it right here. I can because I went for two and made it the first time, which now goes to the next part. And that is as follows. You also have to love the two-point play you want to call. And I know they loved the two-point play they had called. That part I do know. The surprise to me about the two-point play that they called, and Jack Ham and I on Friday talked about this when we left practice. Jack looked at me, he says, they see that formation, they're going to call timeout. And I agree with him. I said, you know, I was thinking about that the other night. I says, you know, they'll probably call timeout and you'll get them to burn one. And then you can make a decision as to what you want to do with the situation. Right? See, that's what we thought was a distinct possibility. Michigan didn't call timeout. But Penn State wanted to run the play anyway, and they loved the play they had called. And when Tyler snaps the ball, Tyler Warren, he's an eligible receiver. That's what makes the play so intriguing. So, in all likelihood, you're thinking about in your back pocket, they kick an extra point. Again, you argue they kick the extra point and make it a one-possession game. I got it. You don't have to even go any further than that. Your math is great. If you're thinking about, hey, look, I want to get two now because I want to give myself the option of winning the game if I score another touchdown instead of tying it, that could have entered into the thought process. Could have. I'm just throwing it out there, just something to at least give it the consideration of it. Tough loss. Very, very tough loss, which then leads to what happened yesterday. And that is, and look, fans are mad. Yeah, fans are mad. Fans are mad because they care. Fans are mad because it's a passionate fan base. This is what Harry and I were talking about today. And I said, Harry, look, but the difference between college and pro is, yes, pro fans are passionate, but not like college. You're not getting 100,000 people to come out. And I know you think there'd be 100,000 people watching the Eagles game. There wouldn't be. Okay? 100,000 people come out to see Texas. 100,000 people come out to see Alabama. 100,000 people come out to see Michigan. 100,000 people come out to see Ohio State. 100,000 people every week come out to see Penn State. Okay? That doesn't happen in the NFL. A lot of times in the NFL, people are selling their tickets. And So there's just a different passion to it. That's why you do have people who get angry, upset. They want the whole world fired and so on and so forth. Okay? And Mike Yurcich ended up losing his job. And did I think it was building toward that? Sure. I thought not maybe at that moment. I thought maybe at the end of the season. I thought maybe it was building in that direction, but only just because of the way things were going. Just one of those like, you know what? Now I want to end this segment here on a total complete positive that is way off topic. Xander Loggenslager has come into the world, and Michelle Mertz sent me his picture. 5 days old. On Saturday, was all bundled up. Xander in a Penn State hat, sitting next to a Penn State We Are Penn State pillow. They sent me the picture. Xander, welcome to the world. Welcome to the Penn State family. And congratulations to your parents. Xander is a beautiful, beautiful child. Beautiful. Got sent that picture, and that was so nice to see that. Put a smile on my face right away. All right? Just wanted to end it on that positive note. How about that? Maybe not what you expected, but yeah. We will take a break. Rich Scarcella next half hour. And again, anybody who argues, there's no argument here. Okay? I'm presenting all sides to it. And if you say, well, they should have kicked it. Okay, that's fine. I completely see exactly where you're coming from. This is not a hot take show. It's not a hot take show. Okay? This is a conversation show. And if you have a completely different opinion, you are absolutely entitled to air that completely different opinion and have it respected. All right? It's always important. And come back with more in a moment. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, RV, motorcycle, whatever it may be. It is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online, sunburymotors.com. Time now to bring in the outstanding Rich Scarcella, who covered the game on Saturday. And then cover the press conference today. Rich, welcome back. Thanks so much for being with us.
Steve, it's always my pleasure.
All right. Interesting times. So I guess we'll start, since we'll go backwards, we'll start with Mike Yurcich. Everyone found out yesterday afternoon that he was not going to be retained as the offensive coordinator. What was your thought on that, and then thoughts moving forward?
Well, I had heard something about 1 o'clock, and I wasn't shocked that James was firing Mike Yurcich. I was shocked at the timing of it. I thought it might happen after the regular season, but after today, and his response to my question, I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner. It sounded like to me and to others that there were game plans being drawn up and they weren't being followed. That's what James was said to me and said during the press conference today.
And I thought his answer to the follow-up on when he was talking about Ty Howell and Jaywan Sider, where he talked about about their loyalty to the program and so forth. I thought that was an interesting answer.
Yes. I mean, it seemed to me that, you know, there are little hints here and there, you know, over Mike's 3 years on the staff, but it really started after the Ohio State game last month when James said we probably should have run the ball more when there were 50 pass plays called and just 18 run plays called at Ohio State. And then he expanded on that at his weekly press conference. So you knew things weren't hunky-dory internally. And then on Saturday, after Saturday's loss to Michigan, and his answer to me regarding my question about Drew Aller and saying that we're not calling enough easy passes to get him into a rhythm when everybody else is doing it in the country, that spoke volumes. But you're right. I don't know about loyalty or anything like that. I know Jaywan and Ty are really stand-up guys. I like both of them a lot. Yeah. I can't speak on you know about Mike Yurcich because I don't really know him as well.
That's right.
I will say this, that I think that's, you know, James wanted to hire Mike 3 years ago. He was eyeing him for several years, and obviously it just didn't work out.
It just didn't work out indeed. It's interesting. You talked about the number of passes thrown in the Ohio State game. So now let's flip it to this game. Penn State had 22 first down plays in the game. 19 were runs and only 3 were passes along the way. What did you think about that when you saw that stat? Because I know you break that down.
Yeah, well, I thought they ran the ball. I think they should have run the ball more.
They ran the ball well.
Yeah, ran the ball well. I don't think James mentioned this after the game that, you know, that Drew got too many pressures. I didn't sense that. I know he was sacked once, and I know at times he was pressured, but I didn't think it was something persistent. I thought I've been critical at times of the offensive line, but I thought the offensive line did a good job Saturday. I really do. To me, and you know, you and I haven't had a chance to talk since we saw each other before the game. I thought perhaps the one sequence overlooked since the end of the game, even today, was the second Penn State offensive series. They had 5 snaps from the 4-yard line or inside the 4-yard line.
Yes.
And could not score a touchdown. And I think 3 of the 5 plays were pass plays.
Yep.
And I thought that was odd, to say the least. I mean, you had to kick the field goal at that. It was that early in the game. I get it. I'm not questioning that decision. You have to kick the field goal. But to me, that was an opportunity to make a statement, to take a 7-0 lead, and it didn't happen. And I thought that was obviously a sign of things to come.
Yeah, I don't want to think too much, but as I was watching the game play out, I felt like that played a role in like a couple of decisions, like to go for 2 when it was 14-9 and so forth. I felt like that sequence where they couldn't get in from the 3-yard line, I think may have influenced a little bit as to how they wanted to go after points.
It may have. We may never know this.
Right.
But I could see that for sure. I still disagree.
Right.
I would have kicked both points.
Right.
But that's a secondary issue. I know a lot of people, a lot of the public, a lot of the fans have brought that up, and I think no matter what, it's Penn State still would have lost the game. I think there are bigger issues than that, far greater issues than that. And I think you may be right, Steve. That may have influenced a lot of things the rest of the game. But I just thought Penn State, like, I mean, Catron Allen looked good, especially on that 34-yard run. There was a nice hole. And I thought that was as good as I can remember Nick Singleton running inside.
Yeah.
For tough yards. I thought he had a nice game. I mean, his numbers aren't glamorous or anything like or spectacular, but I thought against that defense and running almost exclusively inside, I thought he did a good job.
On the defensive side of it, everyone knows they ran the final 32 plays as runs. I think there are two things that played into this. This is me, so you can tell me what you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is that Penn State was getting great pressure off the edge. I think that that played a role. That's the only time they threw was early. And I think that influenced Michigan. And I also think his ability to be a great play-action passer, he's an 84% play-action passer, 84%. You can't put 11 guys in the box because you're always worried he's gonna play-action and do something with it or bootleg it.
Yeah. I think J.J. McCarthy, his numbers are like, he only threw for 60 yards and he didn't throw a pass in the second half. I thought he had a big impact on the game.
Absolutely.
Massive impact on the game. And Penn State did do a really good job. Whether Michigan really respected Michigan's pass or Penn State's pass defense, whatever it was, I just think, or they were afraid, and it was true early. Penn State got pressure on McCarthy early, and then they went to the jumbo package, brought in 6-7 blockers sometimes, and that really was effective. I mean, that drive after Aller's fumble, they went, I don't know if it was, I can't remember exactly the number, 40 yards, and they took up 8 minutes.
Right.
And that's crazy. So it was sort of like the formula Illinois used 2 years ago.
In the 9 overtime game.
Pound. And that didn't win the game. I think they did that because they felt they were that confident in their defense to stop Penn State's offense. I think that's what prompted that decision more than anything.
I agree with you. I think that you play offense to your defense, defense to your offense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not talked about often enough in what we do. And they I think they looked over at their defense and said, "You know what? We're going to keep the ball, chew up some clock, run some plays. You can watch, and when you go out there, we're confident you can stop them." I think that was in a nutshell their game plan.
Yeah. Steve, do you think, and I, you and I are talking, so I'm going to ask you.
Sure. Yeah.
How much do you think Drew Aller's struggles against Ohio State and Michigan played into James's decision yesterday?
I think it had to play some role along the way, because when he made your question in the post game. And the answer he gave, which is the first subject we discussed here, was like we didn't give him enough easy throws early.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear it, but I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That's what he said. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that goes to what play is being called.
Mm-hmm.
And did I think Drew was sharp last week? Yes. This one kind of like Ohio State. Leading in, I could see. Okay. This one kind of took me aback as to, that's not the guy I saw during the week. But I think James' comment about he should have had some easier passes to gain some confidence.
Get him in a rhythm, yeah.
Get him in a rhythm. My apologies. Yeah. Get him into a rhythm.
No, that's all right.
I don't want to use the wrong words here. I think that tells you a lot about what he's thinking about his young quarterback in a spot like this, and that's what he came out thinking in the game as to what they could have done to help him out in that area. So I think that's
I think it definitely played a factor in the decision, and whether that decision, I don't know. I'm sure my guess, and I don't know a thing, is that James had been thinking about this since Ohio State.
Yeah.
About making this move, and then right. Saturday sealed it when they weren't getting those easy throws, easy access mm-hmm. throws. That's what they are. And I'm really taken back by how some fans, and not most fans, not all fans,
right,
reacted Saturday. And I just don't. That's a whole nother bigger issue. I don't understand why adults get so upset and so angry and are screaming and screaming obscenities at whoever, whether it's James Franklin or anybody else. I just won't understand that. I just can't. And
yeah,
can you be disappointed? Of course. Can you disagree with James on decisions that he made? Yes, of course. But to stand in front of hundreds of people and just yell obscenities, I just don't understand that whatsoever.
No, this is what I understand. I understand and appreciate a passionate fan base.
Yes.
I don't want, from a Penn State broadcaster's point of view, I think one of the worst things you can have is an apathetic fan base. Right?
Yes.
And you and I see that with all due respect. I'm not trying to put anybody down, but like when you and I go to Northwestern or we go to Indiana.
Yeah, no question.
We see the real passionate people there, but they're not in great numbers. That means the fan base is apathetic. I go to Indiana for basketball. Oh, it's passionate.
Totally different, right.
Right, yeah. So yeah. 180. All right. So I want a passionate fan base, but I also want a passionate fan base that has the ability to be angry, but to do it with some semblance of class.
Civility.
Yeah.
Civility.
Yes,
that's
civility.
All. Yeah.
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 I mean, you can be, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can be. You can be angry.
Right. Yeah. You and I agree. Yeah. You and I agree.
Yeah. You. I mean, you can be angry. I don't blame you. That's how badly you wanted them to win. You're mad. You think they should have won. I totally appreciate that. There's a different way of expressing it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, I agree. I completely agree.
So let me ask you this. Okay, Penn State loses by 8 at Ohio State. They lose by 9 to Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a case where there's a gigantic gap, a couple of play gap? I mean, how close in reality are the programs?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And someone asked James that a little bit ago. And I don't think it's a big gap,
right?
But it's a gap that's too big for a lot of people.
Yeah, sure. No, it's a gap where they didn't win.
I don't. Yeah. 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 But it is. You know, you can't avoid talking about the 12 game. This is how I put it: the 12 game losing streak to Big Ten teams ranked in the top 10. Right. That to me is, forget everything else. Forget non-conference. Okay. That, and it's, and all but 12 of those games have been against Ohio State and Michigan. Okay, having said that, their one play or one call from, and it was the right call from Curtis Jacobs returning a fumble for touchdown at Ohio State, and maybe changing the whole complexion of the game. Maybe,
and it was,
I don't
and
know,
it,
maybe.
And you and I agree, it was the right call.
It was the right call, absolutely. But that's how close that was.
Right.
Saturday, I didn't feel like, well, look, like we talked about earlier, if Penn State scores a touchdown on that second series, does that change things? How the game unfolds? I don't know. I mean, it certainly would have given the offense some confidence, but I think, to answer your question, I don't think the gap is as large as a lot of people who follow Penn State think it is.
Right.
I know I got asked last week, any Penn State fan that I saw when I was out in public here, how bad is it going to be? And I said,
right.
Wait, what? I said, it's going to be a close, low-scoring game, which it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was basically a 17-9 game. That's the way I look at it. And you know, Penn State would have punted if in normal circumstances, but they had to go for it. I get it.
Yeah.
But everything, like, that's the mentality that Penn State fans who came up to me, they go, how bad? Can they keep it close? I said, yeah, it's going to be a close game.
Right.
And I guess maybe, you know, if you ask them today, maybe it wasn't close enough. Okay. But they all expected Michigan to win like they did last year in the Big House. I think going forward, you're not going to play Michigan now for another 3 years.
Right.
I don't think many people realize that. You do, I know.
Yeah.
They play Michigan at Michigan in 26, and then Michigan doesn't come back till 27.
Right.
So, you know, now to me, all the focus is on next year. I'm not saying to quit the year or anything, but that midseason five-game stretch, I hate to get way ahead, but right, that's what you got to, like, okay, how do you manage your way through that in the middle of next season?
Right.
And so, you know, all the decisions, and obviously I think that's part of the decision that prompted James to make yesterday too, is, you know, looking at next year, we got to be better.
Yeah.
We can't stand still. We got to be better. And I don't think the gap is as big as a lot of Penn State fans think it is. But now you're going to be measured against USC, UCLA, right, Washington, Oregon too.
Right. And by the way, three of those four will have new quarterbacks next year. File that away for later. which is true. I mean, everybody sees. They see Williams. They see Penix. They see Bo Nix. Yeah. Like, ooh. Yeah. Well, they're not playing next year.
They'll be playing next year. They'll be playing in the NFL.
Yeah, they'll be in the three-letter league because to me, the key sequence was the fumble, and here's the reason why. You close out the half the way you want to with a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, you can debate the two-point conversion all you want, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you get the ball to start the second half, and this has been the Penn State pattern all season. And they get a first down, and then they get another first down, and in the process of getting that first down, he fumbles. You actually are starting to now get a handle on the game, and you've scored on six of your first nine drives to start the second half of the season. On the sideline, you ought to be thinking, here we go again, and that crushed it. And I know they got a field goal out of it, but that was a momentum crusher, I thought.
It did, obviously, it hurt them momentum-wise, and the fact that Michigan had the ball for over 8 minutes.
Yeah.
But I didn't think the game was over either.
No.
Penn State had the ball, not counting the last possession on which they scored their second touchdown. They had the ball four more times and did nothing. They only had one first down in those next four possessions.
That's right.
So I thought, was it a big play? Yeah, it was a big play. It was 17-9. But it's still a one-score game. And I think that the biggest thing is that on those next four series, you gained one first down, and that was it. And that, to me, another big reason why they didn't win the game.
Rich, always a pleasure. It's just great talking to you back and forth. Appreciate it so much.
Same here, Steve. Always a pleasure. Take care.
Rich Scarsella, Reading Eagle.